Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet 'em, greet 'em, treat 'em, and street 'em. Today's date is July 5th, 2016, and I am your skeptical host, Ken Milne. The title of today's podcast is Computer Games, Computer Provider Order Entry. And our guest skeptic is Dr. Chris Bond. Chris is an emergency physician and clinical lecturer at the University of Calgary. He is currently the host of CapeCast, which highlights education innovations from emergency medicine residency programs from across Canada. Chris also has his own FOMED blog called Standing on the Corner, Minding My Own Business, Sock Mob. Welcome back to the SGEM, Chris.
Thank you very much, Ken. Lovely to be here.
Lovely to have you. Are you ready for another SGEM hop from CGEM?
Let's do this.
All right, let's do it. We've already done three hot off the presses for CGEM.
All right, and now it's time for number four.
Yeah, and we've been tracking the success. Guess how we're doing? Guess how we're putting it out there? Guess what numbers we're getting?
I have no idea. How are we doing?
We have the number one, the number five, and number six position of all time published in CGEM.
So you're trying to tell me this is working?
Indeed it is. And thanks to all the SGEMers out there in the FOMED world helping make that knowledge translation happen. But this SGEM hop, it's going to be a little different. This time we're looking at an emergency department operations study, something we've not done before.
Operations?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
It is, isn't it? And because it's a hot off the press, we've invited the lead author to join us today.
Dr. Andrew Gray just graduated from the CCFPEM program at Western University in London, Ontario, and is now working full-time at a community ED in Woodstock General Hospital in Ontario.
Welcome to the SGEM, Andy.
Thanks for having me, guys.
So was this your resident research project?
Yes, it was.
Okay, and so what got you so interested in this CPOE thing?
Well, I was basically living through it as a resident. I got some previous work that I did in fast tracks and wait times, and I thought it would apply nicely to this type of project.
Well, because this is an ED operation study, we're not going to start with a case. However, we do have some background material on the topic of CPOE. So, Andy, kick us off.
Good. So, I mean, emergency department crowding is a growing issue across Canada. And as more tertiary emergency departments implement computerized provider order entry, it's important to analyze the ED metrics to see how the CPOE actually impacts the throughput.
And we've seen some previous studies that have shown CPOE has no impact on mortality and may in fact improve pain treatment and adherence to certain common presenting complaint medication protocols. For example, stroke and renal colic.
Chris, some studies have shown that there may be an impact on throughput in a number of possible areas, such as decreased physician productivity, increased length of stay for admitted patients, or increased time to order labs and imaging.
Yeah, and other studies have shown that CPOE fixes some errors, creates new ones, and frustrates physicians. There's no consistent or comprehensive evidence in favor of CPOE.
A study looking at productivity in a community hospital emergency department showed the mean percentage of time spent in data entry was more than 40%, and less than 30% of time was spent on direct patient care. And they calculated that on a busy 10-hour shift, the number of mouse clicks was close to 4,000.
Yikes. To our knowledge, we haven't seen any other studies that directly evaluate CPOE on ED wait times, which is a key variable in throughput and crowding.
So, Chris, give us the question we're going to try to answer today.
Today, we're going to try to answer, what impact will CPOE have on ED patient throughput?
And Andy, what's the title of your study?
Our study is titled, The Impact of Computerized Provider Order Entry on Emergency Department Flow. It was published in CGEM this year.
So let's go through the PICO. What kind of population were they dealing with, Chris?
Emergency department patients 18 years and older presenting to two quaternary hospitals in July and August of 2013 and 2014.
And Andy, who did you not want in your study? Who did you exclude? Who did you admit from the data?
Well, we had to exclude any patients with negative wait times, just because that obviously doesn't make any sense, and any really extreme outliers that were more than 24 hours of a wait time, those were presumed to be errors, probably from the wrong day recorded. So we also excluded any patients with just missing vital statistics like gender, age, or CTAS score.
All right, and what was the intervention, Chris?
Computerized provider order entry, or CPOE.
And what did they compare it to?
Non-computerized order entry.
And what was the primary outcome?
The primary outcome was emergency department throughput, and they had three primary outcomes. But like we know, the Highlander always says, there can be only one. The three outcomes were wait time, which was the time to first physician assessment after triage in minutes, the length of stay, which was the time to disposition after triage, also in minutes, and left without being seen, which was the proportion of patients that left without being seen divided by the total patients for a given time period.
And what were their secondary outcomes, their subgroup analyses?
They looked at CTAS 1 through 5, wait time, length of stay, and left without being seen, and wait time and length of stay for admitted patients.
Chris, we mentioned CTAS, so you better explain to the SGEMers, not from Canada, what does CTAS stand for, and what do each of the levels mean?
So CTAS is the Canadian Triage and Acuity Scale. It's kind of the national system of triage and is a national program that started in 1999 to standardize emergency department triage in Canada. CTAS 1s are patients requiring resuscitation to be seen immediately. CTAS 2s are emergent patients to be seen within 15 minutes. CTAS 3 are urgent patients to be seen within 30 minutes. 4, semi-urgent to be seen within 60 minutes. And 5, non-urgent to be seen within 120 minutes. Now, obviously, these are all ideal goals, not what actually happens in reality.
All right, Andy, why don't you give us your own conclusions from the paper, and then we'll get on to the checklist.
Sure. So our conclusion was that CPOE implementation detrimentally impacted all the patient throughput variables that we examined. The most striking result that we found was actually that the length of stay increased by 63 minutes for admitted patients. And this raised the question as to whether there are some potentially detrimental effects to patient safety with CPOE implementations, and if those might outweigh its benefits.
Great. Okay, let's go through the quality checklist for observational trials. The first question is, did the study address a clearly focused issue?
Yes, it did. The question was what impact did implementation of a new CPOE system have on wait times, length of stay, and left without being seen percentage?
Did the authors use an appropriate method to answer their question?
Yes, they did. This was before and after CPOE implementation using administrative data.
And was the cohort recruited in an acceptable way?
It was.
And was the exposure accurately measured to minimize bias?
Yes, it was.
And was the outcome accurately measured to minimize bias?
Yes, these were objective outcomes.
And how about the authors? Did they identify all important confounding factors?
No, this was only over a two-month period before and after implementation of a new CPOE. New CPOE is bound to have more difficulties in the initial startup phase as staff are learning to use it. So longer-term outcomes are needed.
So question 7, how precise are the results?
We're unsure about this one, but we'll talk more about it when you talk nerdy to me later, Ken.
Okay. Do you believe the results?
I do.
And can the results be applied to the local population?
Again, unsure. This depends on if you are using the same or a similar CPOE and how much the CPOE does for you. For example, does it just do meds or does it also do diagnostic imaging, all of your orders, etc.? It also depends how long the CPOE has been in use in your particular setting, as more time will likely address some of the weaknesses of the CPOE and will allow users to work out the kinks and become better with it.
And the final question, do the results of the study fit with other available evidence?
This is kind of a yes-no. There's conflicting evidence with respect to the effect of CPOE on length of stay and other patient flow parameters, as we discussed in the background.
Okay, so let's go through the key results. What did they find?
So median wait times increased by 5 minutes.
All right, so it went from 78 minutes versus 83 minutes after CPOE.
Right. Median length of stay increased by 10 minutes.
Yeah, it was around 4 hours before they implemented this, and then it went up by about 10 minutes.
And the proportion of left without being seen increased by 0.9%.
Yeah, it was 7.2% versus 8.1%.
Median length of stay for admitted patients increased by 63 minutes.
So patients admitted to the hospital waited about 12 hours prior to the implementation of CPOE, and that went up by just over an hour after the implementation of CPOE.
The proportion of left without being seen increased significantly for CTAS 3, 4, and 5 patients.
Yeah, and it was especially for those CTAS 5 patients. It went from 24% versus 42%. So that concludes the results section. Let's talk a little nerdy. Let's bring Andy back and talk about his paper. And we have a few questions for you, Andy. And, you know, being a listener to the SGEM, you might think we only have 5 questions, But you know what? We doubled it and we came up with 10, 5 for each of us. So Chris, why don't you start things off?
All right, Andy, let's talk about excluded patients. So we noticed that you excluded 466 patients before CPOE and 1,235 after. Why did you have three times as many patients excluded after CPOE? And do you think that impacted the results?
Well, I'd hate to disappoint you, Chris, but I don't really have a great answer for why there were so many exclusions afterwards. You guys don't have the benefit of looking at the data, and I know that most of those exclusions were actually negative wait times. And we kind of guessed, having looked at the data, that most of these were errors in kind of AM, PM problems. You know, somebody put on 10 PM when it was actually 10 AM, and so they had a huge difference there. So we tried to exclude all of those patients. And you know, I don't think that that necessarily impacted our results, because if those were accurate results, if they were a positive number instead, I mean, they probably were wait times kind of all over the map, as we see with any patients. And with our really large sample size of 20,000 visits, I don't think those few hundreds were going to make much difference.
So question two, I wanted to ask you about interquartile range. You represented wait times and length of stay as medians with interquartile ranges. Why did you use these statistics to describe your data? And do you think this gives you a more precise estimate of the results?
Well, I'm certainly not a statistician, but we did do some research on this. And so we used a special test called the Kolmogorov-Smirnov test to decide if our data was parametric or non-parametric. So whether it was normally distributed or was it skewed or non-normally distributed. And since our data was non-parametric, the right test to use for central tendency is a median with interquartile range, because a mean with standard deviation, which is what we often see, is not the appropriate test.
All right, next let's talk about statistical versus clinical significance. You demonstrated statistically significant changes, a few minutes for wait time and length of stay, 1% increases for left without being seen, and 1 hour increases in the length of stay for admitted patients who were waiting a median of 12 hours already. Do you think these represent clinically significant changes?
Well, I guess probably ask your brother or your sister if they would want to wait an extra 5 or 10 minutes in the emerge. But I do agree. I mean, the statistical significance and the clinical significance are not the same thing. I think it's fair to agree that, you know, admitted patients waiting 1 hour longer, they're going to notice that. But we really have a harder time understanding if, you know, a wait time of 5 or 10 minutes, is that going to really be noticeable by the patients? So We tried to, you know, we didn't examine patient satisfaction in our study. That would have been way too much work. So we tried to look at the left without being seen rate, since in previous studies we've seen that that is a pretty good correlation to patient satisfaction. And because we did see a change in the left without being seen rate, we concluded that, yeah, I think that people did notice this is probably also clinically significant.
The fourth thing, Andy, was you only looked at 2 months of the year, July and August in 2013 before CPOE and in 2014 after CPOE. And these are summer months when you have new residents starting, lots of people taking holidays. Do you think these 2 months really represent the whole year?
Absolutely not. I think anyone who's lived through new residents coming in July on ICU or whatever else, it definitely doesn't represent the whole year. But I don't think this matters in our paper, because we tried to match the years, July and August, from 1 year to the next year. So we tried to take away any confounding from new residents, vacation, anything like that. Also, in my study, we were sort of selfishly limited to my residency program. So in order to get my project done in time, I had to only accept the data up to July and August so that I had time to work on it before finishing next July.
Okay, let's talk about the startup phase. So the CPOE was introduced to the entire hospital system as part of a program called HUGO, or Healthcare Undergoing Optimization, in April 2014. There's a learning curve with new systems. Perhaps more training or better training was needed. In other words, could the impact on emergency department flow be related to CPOE difficulties in the startup phase of the HUGO project?
I mean, I think that the startup phase is a huge problem with this. So, I mean, that's why one of the other reasons we chose July and August was to leave a little bit of a gap. Our Hugo implementation started in April of 2014. So we just left out May and June to try to avoid some of the issues with the startup phase, and only included then July and August. So from a personal perspective, I'd say that I expect things have improved dramatically since there's always ongoing efforts to improve Hugo, even in Woodstock where I work now. We're always trying to make this a better process. So I think it's more the implementation phase where we see the problem, although we don't know how long that phase lasts for. I bet things have improved since then.
Okay, so let's talk a little external validity. This took place at the London Health Science Center that included two quaternary care emergency departments in London, Ontario. Do you think your study has external validity to other EDs like non-teaching hospitals, community hospitals, rural emergency departments, or even non-Canadian departments?
Ken, I'd say that's really hard to know exactly. I mean, we did only examine one specific CPOE software. Anybody who works in family medicine knows if you use a different EMR than somebody else, you have different bugs with different computer programs. So I'm not sure if you're not using the same program, you'd run into the same problems that we did at LHSC. Also, LHSC is a pretty unique hospital. At the time of my study as a resident, LHSC was in one of the worst wait times and length of stay in the country. So it might not represent the average emergency department in Canada. In saying that, I think that there's many large emergency departments that struggle with crowding. So if your hospital struggles with crowding and you're concerned about wait times and length of stay, then it's important to consider the impact of CPOE on crowding.
So the next question is about before and after. One of the problems with before and after studies is other changes over time could have been responsible for the differences you observed. Do you think any other factors could have played a role besides CPOE in your study?
I mean, yes, LHSC is a huge, always changing hospital, you know, construction, staff changes. I think it's hard to control for all confounders when you go from one year to the next. So, you know, there's some variables that we didn't look at. Like there was at the time of my project, the new psychiatric facility was patients were sort of being transferred from one to the next. They were working on the Toyota production system, which is a way to speed up the emergency department. And as always, there's terrible problems with inpatient bed access. So all these confounders, I think, were a bit hard to control for. But that's why we had the study only a year apart, try to minimize those if we could.
Another important thing we wanted to focus on was patient-oriented outcomes. And you measured wait times, length of stays, left without being seen. But did you consider and measure other patient-oriented outcomes like medication errors, adherence to EBM protocols, time to pain management, and overall patient satisfaction? Because these are other quality indicators that have been investigated in other CPOE studies.
So I predicted that you guys would tell me that we needed to focus our study more. So no, we didn't look at those things. We wanted to really keep it focused on one question. So I did include some references in our paper about previous studies that suggest the CPOE has a benefit. I don't think our goal was to show that CPOE has no benefits. To me, that is clear. There are some benefits, but it was more important to consider that there are some risks during implementation that should be weighed against the benefits.
Right. And then the next question is about lack of inpatient beds. Many Canadian hospitals, including yours, have occupancy above 80% and sometimes as high as 125%. This can lead to overcrowding in the emergency department. What impact, if any, do you think this had on your study?
I think this had a huge impact on our study, and unfortunately, we didn't analyze any inpatient bed situation from one year to the next. So often, actually, our hospital operated in a bedlock situation. When I was a resident, there was often no patients to be seen in eMERGE because we had nowhere to see those patients. To be fair, I worked both years as a resident in the time period that I studied. I didn't personally notice a difference that we had worse inpatient occupancy one year over the other, but some might have a different opinion than me. And I think the biggest issue with this is that really any small perturbation in efficiency when you're operating on, you know, only 10% of your beds are turnover beds, everything else has admitted patients in them, that is going to make a more dramatic impact on your flow.
All right. And the last question, question number 10, is about physician satisfaction. And in preparing this podcast, I noticed a new study came out in the Mayo Clinic Proceedings showing that physician satisfaction with electronic health records and CPOE was generally low. And those using electronic health records and CPOE were at higher risk for professional burnout. So did you see any issues with physician satisfaction due to the introduction of CPOE?
Yeah, I mean, the whole reason that I had this clinical question in mind is, as I said, I was a resident while this whole process was going on, and I saw the disgruntled people that were talking about the CPOE, while others welcomed it with open arms. And it left me the opportunity to design a project where I could answer this type of question. So the hope for my study was really to shed some light on the flow issues. And I was either hoping it would answer the question, yeah, this doesn't slow us down at all. It actually works just fine. So maybe stop complaining about it. Or, hey, this really does slow us down. So maybe we should think twice about it.
Well, Andy, those were the questions we had for you. Do you have anything else you wanted to comment upon?
I mean, I want to say that I really did make an effort to present this data in the way that it came to me. I really don't want to scare people away from CPOE because I think it does have some benefit for us. And if we work on the electronic medical record systems, implement CPOE carefully, it really does have some potential to improve things. I just want to more have people think about how important it is to not jump into it right away without thinking or without realizing there might be some risks.
Well, Chris, can you comment on the author's conclusions and compare them to the SGEM's conclusions?
Yeah, we agree that this implementation of CPOE at this quaternary hospital system had a detrimental impact on emergency department flow. It is unsure if these increased wait times, length of stay, and left without being seen rates are clinically important, though. We also question whether the potential benefits of CPOE outweigh the potential detrimental effects of CPOE on patient safety.
All right, how about giving a bottom line then?
Implementation of CPOE may initially be met with some difficulties, worsen emergency department patient flow, and contribute to ED overcrowding. The long-term impact on patient-oriented outcomes and physician satisfaction remains to be seen.
Well, I looked around for some FOMED resources, and I really couldn't find much except for a great video by ZDogMD called EHR State of Mind. I'll throw a link up on the blog. It's now time for the Keener contest, and last week's winner was Patricia Vandenberg from Sweden. She knew India was a country suffering from a cholera outbreak in the 1960s that prompted the development of rehydration electrolyte solutions. Chris, what's the Keener contest question this week?
Name the song that the HAL 9000 computer sang in the movie Space Odyssey.
Oh, a very good nerdy computer sci-fi kind of question. Well, if you know the answer, send it to the sgem@gmail.com, and the first correct answer will, as always, receive a cool skeptical prize. Well, thanks, Chris, for helping out with another SGEM hop for CGEM.
Always a pleasure, Ken.
Now I have a special treat. Dr. Brent Toma from Canadium.org, who also helps with these SGEM hops, to remind everyone about the social media aspect of this project.
Hello, SGEMers. This is Brent Toma from Canadium and the CGEM social media team. You've listened to the podcast, and now it's your turn to have your say. What do you think about this SGEM hop episode? What questions do you have for Dr. Gray about CPOE? How have your experiences with electronic health records been? Please join the conversation on Twitter at the SGEM hop hashtag, on the SGEM Facebook group, or on the SGEM blog. The best social media feedback that we receive will be published in CGEM.
Thanks, Brent. SGEMers, don't forget there are some great conferences coming up this fall. There's the Best Evidence in Emergency Medicine course, September 19th and 20th in Niagara Falls, and the Teaching course this November, 14th to 16th in New York City. Thank you very much, Andy, for coming on the show and talking about your paper.
My pleasure.
Hey, Andy, you just graduated and started working at a community hospital in Woodstock. Did they use CPOE there?
Yes, I am actually using the exact same CPOE system that I used as a resident.
All right, Andy. As our special guest, will you give us the SGEM tagline?
Sure. So remember to be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you heard it on Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine.
Talk to everyone next time.